Welcome to Functional Health Radio. I'm Jen Barton. I'm a fitness trainer in Sandpoint, and I own a gym called The Shed. It's on Michigan Street, and I train people online as well. And I'm here with Jill Kahn. Jill is a marriage and family therapist and practices in Sandpoint, and she also works with clients all across the country. And each month, we come together to share ideas and topics on mental health, relationships, and fitness. And today, this is the back-to-school episode.
Yes, it is.
We're going to talk about some issues that usually crop up for parents at the beginning of the school year and ways to offer support, and then also what teachers wish parents would do to help prepare kids. I did talk to a teacher this morning also.
Oh, good.
And then some five signs that parents have a unhealthy boundary with their teens.
Yes.
And finally, for those parents who have young athletes, what are some phrases that will help your kid on and off of the field? Because that can be a sensitive time also. So we have a lot to talk about today. But how are you, Jill?
I'm good. As you can tell, I've been on the water a lot.
She's very tan.
Lots of time and loving our new pontoon boat. That's just been awesome. And my daughter came home last weekend and I got we went to a friend shower and then she's got her shower maybe the same weekend as your wedding.
Oh, when is she due?
She's due the end of October.
Oh, wow.
So we're getting all sorts of ready for...
I know three people now with babies due in October.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. And I know you have your big event coming up.
The big wedding.
Yes.
2.5 weeks. I'm not freaking out. We were just talking about, and if any of our listeners have great suggestions for the deer problem.
Yes.
I was at New Leaf Nursery a few weeks ago, and this gentleman walked in, and the woman asked, "How can I help you, sir?" "I need something for deer." And she's like, "You need a gun and a dog."
Well, I'll tell you, the dog's insufficient.
Yeah.
But this new spray that my neighbor told me about is killer. I still have roses and lilies and all the other flowers that I've worried about. So
yeah. I'm sure I look like a crazy person with my neighbors because every morning, it's like 5 a.m, I have my cup of coffee and I walk outside. And I walk to all the different garden areas to see if any damage has been done.
Yes.
And sure enough, there's always something.
Oh.
But I'm double netting now and... 2.5 weeks. I don't know. My mom just found a bunch of deals on plants. So I've got everything stored in the garden area protected. So it's down to the wire.
It is.
But it'll be a great day.
Yes.
And we're looking forward to welcoming Chris to our family.
Yay.
Yeah.
Sounds wonderful.
Yeah. And then babies.
Yes. The babies.
You're going to be a grandma. Did you know I got to go to swim lessons with Jamie?
Yeah, I saw the picture. Very cute.
So he is now kicking and clapping.
Woohoo!
I just think it's so great to be able to. I hope that grandparents out there are as fortunate to be able to take part in little ones'
development
activities.
Yeah.
It's so different than being the parent where you're just like, you need to do this and now we're doing this. It's like, oh, I get to go in and participate, and it's really a special thing.
Yeah, so cool.
I'm excited for you.
Me too.
All right, well, let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to start talking about how to help these kids get back to school.
Back to school.
You're listening to Functional Health Radio. Welcome back. This is Functional Health Radio. I'm Jen Barton. I'm a fitness trainer and a local gym owner. My gym's called The Shed over on Michigan Street. And I'm here with licensed marriage and family therapist Jill Kahn. And she practices in Sandpoint and works with clients online. And today we're doing the back to school episode because even though we don't have children anymore going to school, I still remember how stressful it was.
Oh, yes.
And the anxiety and all that was involved. And do you remember going to Walmart to buy school supplies?
I remember. Target was where we went. I remember going to Target when it was a big deal.
And
big
looking deal. For the class list.
Yes.
I could never find the class
list. Oh, that's right. At Staples sometimes we'd do that.
Yeah. And it was always nothing available by the time I got my act
together.
It
was all gone.
All gone. Yeah. But anyway, today we're going to talk about the first topic is issues that usually crop up for parents at the beginning of the school year and maybe ways to offer some support for them.
So, of course, one of the biggest issues is getting people back into their sleep habits for school. Because after the summer, it gets really distorted. And when kids don't get regulated before the school year, it can lead to kids that show difficulty in regulating their emotions or behaviors. So that's hard on the teacher. And also, a rushed morning routine and full after-school schedule can lead to an increase in conflict between parents and children.
Yeah.
Just a lot of stress.
That was actually the number one thing I talked to a teacher member this morning.
Yes.
And she said, if they could just get back to their sleep routine.
Yes.
That would be so helpful.
Yes. So it's really important to get this back on track so they can stay focused and have fewer problems. Mm-hmm. So beginning this transition a week or two before school starts is very, very helpful. Mm-hmm. So you can start slowly. You can adjust the bedtime and wake up time by 15 minutes each day and kind of get them back on track. And if your child is experiencing some anxiety about returning to school, it'll make getting to sleep more difficult. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then be sure that you're having conversations with them before going to bed
right.
to ease some of the anxiety.
Did your kids have anxiety going to school?
Not a lot, but we always talked about, you know, how are you feeling about going back to school? What are you feeling? What are you thinking about that? And so, yes.
Yeah. I mean, I had anxiety going to school. It was always stressful. I only like sports. And so I was always, and my parents were teachers.
Oh, yeah.
So I brought on a lot of pressure on myself. So the anxiety was definitely an issue that I was dealing with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we need to address that
mm-hmm.
for sure. Yeah. So the next one is social concerns. And I think this is becoming a very big issue. Mm-hmm. Insecurities around friendships can be a common issue. Kids worry about being bullied, being left out, or simply not feeling like they belong. Fear of not fitting in is a common worry, especially if you've moved to a new school district or your child's entering middle school or high school. It may seem like it's not that big a deal to the parents, but fears about making new friends, being accepted by peers, or handling new social dynamics can all be really significant stressors mm-hmm. for kids.
I'm sure.
Kids may obsess about things like what to wear or how many likes their posts are getting on social media. If you see them getting sucked into this social media use, that's a clue you need to set stronger boundaries, particularly as the school year is starting. Mm-hmm. So again, I think that's another thing where you need to do some groundwork before school starts. If you establish expectations for this year in advance, whether it's getting homework done before screen time or, which something I really support, is a technology policy.
Yeah.
Can be very helpful.
So think about that. You know, the Spokane School District is trying to pass with no cell phones in the schools. I think it's great.
I love it. I'm so happy. I think it's about time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? They're so insidious. Kids may also have concerns about bullying or even their own safety, mm-hmm. especially with all the gun issues, right? Make sure they know who they can go to for help when they need it when they're at school. And if your child does face a bullying situation, instead of telling your child to toughen up or fight back, you may address a situation with the school.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to dismiss their fears. You want to really talk about, okay, what options do we have and how can we get adequate support?
And I did that. One of my kids was being bullied.
Oh, good.
In the elementary school. And it was handled so well.
Oh, good.
So just going in and asking for an appointment and a sit down with the principal, it was great. And
yes.
It was solved.
And that's excellent. And when bullying does happen, suggest that they, instead of fighting back, keep a calm face, walk away, and then go talk to a significant adult.
Yeah.
So the next one is academic concerns. Worries about handling schoolwork, keeping up with assignments, or understanding new material can cause a lot of stress for kids.
For sure.
Emotional issues, health issues, or worries about bullying can also impact a child's academic performance. So it's important to see the whole picture of what's going on in order to figure out the best way to resolve the issue.
Mm-hmm.
So be aware of all of the ramifications and dynamics. If academic issues persist, you and or your child might talk to the school counselor or school psychologist who can do some testing and assessments to determine if there are other learning challenges that should be evaluated.
Went through that too.
Yes.
So let me just say that it just takes reading your children and really looking for, in our situation, anxiety was the biggest sign that something wasn't right.
Yes.
And so then following up with looking at the schoolwork. why is it really not being, is it being turned in? Is the teacher really that far behind with checking?
Right.
You know, all those, and then you start to put it together. And the school does have a resource for testing.
Yes.
But in our case, that wasn't, we needed more.
Yes.
And we were able to go to an amazing place in Spokane that we had a lot of teachers from Gonzaga that were involved. And so that was really amazing. And we got to the root of it all.
And the sooner you can get these diagnoses, whether it's ADHD or spectrum or learning disabilities or dyslexia, whatever, the better your child can make the adjustment and have less anxiety and other emotional issues. If your child is experiencing anxiety, it may manifest in physical symptoms, and that may be insomnia, stomach aches, a change in mood. And it's good to know that anxiety and gastrointestinal issues go hand in hand. So if you start noticing that your child is having those gastrointestinal difficulties, really pay attention and look at, is it merely a physical issue, or is there something psychological that's causing it? If anxiety is the cause, you can help by providing your child with space to talk about their feelings. We don't ever, this is really important, want to invalidate or dismiss a child's feelings.
No.
And that could be physical sensations as well as emotions. Take the time to listen. Really slow down, empathize, validate. And you might also tell them about times in your life when you felt nervous and how you dealt with it.
Right.
And I really believe this as well. Sometimes the best conversations can happen in the car.
Oh, for sure. You have them in there.
Yes. And walks can be similar.
Sure.
Your child doesn't have to make direct eye contact. Mm-hmm. And it's just so much easier for them to have conversations. It can make it a lot safer to share. So it's a really good time to simply be curious and ask open-ended questions like, how are you feeling about going back to school? Mm-hmm. You know, what are you thinking about that? What do you imagine it will be like? All of those open-ended questions that don't allow for a yes or no or fine answer. So establishing routines for kids to follow in the morning, especially in the morning, right? Morning is so difficult. But also after school can be helpful. That consistency and structure provides a sense of stability. If your child is feeling anxious about things that will be new this year, you can help acclimate them through exposure, for example, by practicing the walk to the bus stop or the school, or visiting the new classroom.
That was always helpful.
Yeah.
Like, let's go see where you are going to be.
Yeah. Let's go see your space.
Let's see where the bathroom is.
And maybe meet your teacher, all those things. If your child is so anxious they're refusing to go to school, school anxiety, we call this, it can be really tempting to let them stay at home. But this is absolutely the wrong thing to do. It only reinforces the situation. It will not help them deal with anxiety. They've got to learn to work through it, and in fact may make it worse. So instead, validate your child's emotion. Teach them coping tools for their fear and anxiety. And then be firm about the need to go to school. That's crucial.
Right. And then what do you do if they're still showing signs of, you know, so nervous and sick and, you know, we want them to go to school? Do we go to a therapist like you, or what would be the next step?
Yes. If you get to a point where, and I've even said, when people have come to me about school phobia, I said, you know, you may have to carry them into the school. Yeah. You may have to do something really drastic, but you have to be very firm about making them go and not being allowed to throw a fit and avoid school.
Yeah.
And then when we take a look at what's going on in terms of the separation anxiety. So yes, going to a therapist if you're having trouble is a good thing. And also, reassure children that their concerns are normal. Everyone feels insecure at times, and we all have strange things our brains and bodies sometimes do. Let them know they're not alone. When talking to your child, you also want to avoid overreacting, right? If you panic about it, that increases their anxiety. Comparing them to siblings or to their peers, or by taking over, or by offering advice or trying to fix the problem for them. Instead, ask them what they think they could do or say in a given situation and help them explore their options. This will encourage independence and problem-solving abilities. And sometimes just listening to kids can be very powerful. Simply your emotional presence and support can be calming. And again, if your child continues, seek help through your pediatrician or mental health person.
And when I was talking to the teacher earlier too, she wanted everyone to remember that the breakfast is so important.
Yes.
And having good nutrition.
Yes.
And take advantage of the school breakfast programs if it's too much. You know, if you don't even have the time to do the breakfast, send them to school and they can get that before they start.
That's a great thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one thing we always tried to do was to have breakfast together before we left, just to create a connection time, right?
For sure.
Grounding. Maintaining a connection with your child will give them opportunities to talk with you. And I think this is so important. Do things you both enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that allows you to connect. Ask what's on their minds and listen patiently with, and this is crucial, your full attention. Do not have your screen around.
Oh, gosh, I know.
That is, it's such a problem. You know, parents are as guilty as kids sometimes their overconsumption of screens. So keep your screen put away when you're interacting with your children. And you don't always have to discuss things that are worrying. You can focus also on the positive. It's important that you ask what's going well and what they're looking forward to, both in and outside of school.
Yeah, and looking at another thing, I wish I did better when my kids were in school, but looking at the school calendar and taking advantage of the, you know, those back-to-school nights.
Yes.
I know it's a pain. We're working, and then we have to go to back-to-school night. But it is really important to make that connection with the teacher as well. So if she or he sees signs that maybe your child's struggling, they know they can easily talk to you about it.
And it also gives your child the message that you value their education, that it's important to you, and that they see you making that effort.
Yeah.
So that's reassuring for the kids.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll find out what some teachers wish parents did. You're listening to Functional Health Radio. Welcome back. This is Functional Health Radio. I'm Jen Barden. I'm a fitness trainer, and I own a gym in Sandpoint called The Shed. And I'm here with licensed marriage and family therapist, Jill Kahn, and she practices in Sandpoint. And we're talking about back-to-school issues with our kids.
Yes.
And now, what teachers wish we would do for our kids. And then later, we're going to talk about, are you a helicopter or a snowblower parent?
Yes, big issue. So, again, the importance of reestablishing routines, the waking up and going to bed at a normal time is so huge.
Yeah.
So the first weeks of school can be exhausting for everybody. So anything you can do to make kids get back into the rhythm.
How hard it was.
It is hard.
Yeah.
And so prepping in advance is really helpful. This is very important. Number two, read every day.
Yes.
With younger children, parents should spend at least a little time each day reading with them. It's a great way to boost their reading skills as well as have some really good connection time together. Mm-hmm. There's a back-to-school dip with children who haven't read at all and have spent a lot of time on screens. That's a big problem. Mm-hmm. The kids need to be kept current with some of the academic skills during the summer. So if you can, in the last couple of weeks before school starts, get back into it, that will help.
I remember having to do.
Yeah.
Now, the libraries always had like a program.
Yes.
And we'd go, we'd pick out our books.
Yes.
And then every day we had to read. I think my mom and dad, it was like 15 minutes, but it was, as much as I didn't like it, it was really helpful once we went back to school.
Well, and I was the opposite kid who brought home a huge stack of books every week from the library. So even 5 minutes a day helps reinforce vocabulary, comprehension, and listening skills. So research shows that students spend around 6 weeks relearning material in the new. So what a waste of time, right? Considering the current literary crisis in the country, this is one of the best things a parent can do for their child before the school year begins. Children who are more proficient readers can read aloud to you or to themselves. Mm-hmm. You can encourage older kids to read by making books available, especially high interest ones, mm-hmm. taking regular trips to the library and designating time for reading and having turns screened off.
Yeah.
Having screens turned off.
For sure.
Yes, really important. Third, find opportunities to practice fine motor skills.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Encourage kids in lower grades to practice fine motor skills by having them use scissors, work on puzzles, draw, use Play-Doh, or clay. These activities can help improve their eye-hand coordination and make tasks like writing and using classroom tools easier. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's great.
That's a great. So, yeah, playing with your kids and, you know, whatever.
Well, I remember making Play-Doh with the
kids.
It was much fun.
Yes. Yeah. That was really fun. Number four, encourage independence. If you have an incoming kindergartner, start with making sure your child can use the bathroom on their own.
Yeah,
that's a big issue. Yeah. So taking care of that, have also kids practice opening the kinds of food that you will be giving them to take in their lunch so that they don't have to rely on an adult to help them with their lunch.
Right.
Number five, give kids responsibilities.
Yes.
Doesn't happen enough. Doing chores at home can prepare kids for classroom responsibilities, such as being the line leader. Mm-hmm. Create opportunities for children to perform new tasks that are age specific. For example, a second grader can begin the task of preparing their own lunch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of things that kids can do, feeding the pets, cleaning up and helping clean up at the kitchen. Mm-hmm. Very important.
Cleaning their bedrooms.
And their bathrooms.
Yes.
Number six, prepare them to advocate for themselves.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that's a good one. Kids should know how to ask for help if they're sick, lost, or need help with schoolwork or resolving a peer conflict. School can be overwhelming and many students shut down because they have no idea how to ask for help in different situations.
I imagine some kids are quiet, introverts, and the whole thing is, that was who I was. It was very intimidating. I was intimidated and I needed help.
Yes.
You know, it wasn't easy for me, but it was, you know, I'd just hold it in and it led to anxiety. So definitely helping kids feel good about being able to ask
for help. And normalizing it. And we had that with one of our kids too, because what happens is people who are intelligent but have some sort of learning disability mm-hmm. or challenge feel embarrassed and ashamed that they're not performing.
Right.
And so, but they don't want to ask for help because that makes them feel like there's something wrong with them. So they just sort of bluff along.
Yeah.
So we need to really pay attention to that if that might be happening. Right?
Yeah.
So help them practice how to ask for help in different situations. Mm-hmm. So you can practice it through talking through potential scenarios. Let's say you have an assignment that you can't figure out or that you're having difficulty with your classroom assignments. What could you say?
Right.
What could you do? Who could you go to? And role playing. So reassuring kids that both parents and adults in their school building are there to help them and are safe.
Yeah, I wonder what the elementary schools do. I think this is a huge thing, and I hope that I don't remember what it was like when I was in elementary school. And if I know I didn't feel like it was easy, but that was probably my own stuff. But I know the high school here does a great job with, they have a whole like after school where you can go to any of the classrooms and get help with your teachers.
Wow.
And so it was a wonderful resource. So even if you were nervous to like, oh, I don't even get this statistics, you know, assignment, you could go in and see Mrs. Ald afterwards and get the help that you needed.
Nice.
Yeah. So we do have those opportunities as
they
get
older.
That's
great. Yeah. That's wonderful. So I like this one a lot. Number seven, prioritize kindness. So instead of reprimanding children when they do something unkind to someone else, parents can have conversations with their kids about what kindness is, what it looks like, what it feels like. And there is a book called How Full Is Your Bucket for Kids? And that can be a starting point for these kinds of discussions. Ask kids about the ways they showed kindness to others and the kinds of kindnesses that were shown to them.
That's It's so important. And I have noticed, like, with commercials, have you noticed on TV, they're starting to show quite a few about kids. They use the Olympics where the athletes were helping each other. Like, maybe they'd fall in a race and help each other up. And then they'd go to where two kids were playing soccer and the little kid would run back and help. Oh. So I think there's a movement, maybe.
I hope so. Yeah. Because we do need to really emphasize the importance of showing kindness and sensitivity in opposition to bullying. So supporting others instead of putting them down. So the last one is talk positively about school. So when you mention school throughout the summer, especially in the weeks leading up to the return, right now, focus on the positive aspects. You might ask your child what friends they're looking forward to seeing again, or what skills they're excited to work on in the coming year, what sports they're looking forward to playing. You know, what do they look forward to? This can help a child feel more focused and motivated. Parents speaking positively about school to their child can help alleviate anxiety that their child might be feeling. And finally, this was a big one in my family. You can generate excitement by planning a back-to-school shopping trip for new clothes. That was a big thing in my family.
The 90s look is back.
Oh, really?
My friend has a daughter who's going into middle school, and she's like, it's all 90s clothes again.
Wow.
I'm like, wow.
Interesting.
We just keep circling.
Circling. Well, that was a big event for us. We would oftentimes...
Would you go to Spokane?
Actually, I grew up in California, so we'd go up to San Francisco.
Oh, nice.
And we'd stay in the city and go shopping, and it was like, that was a big deal.
I grew up here, so we went to Spokane.
Yes.
And it was a big deal to go down to the Bon Marché.
Yes.
And then we would go, and you'd walk on all the walks.
The skywalks.
To all the different stores and then find the clothes. And then taking my brother was such a pain because he could never decide.
Oh, shoot.
And he didn't want to. He was one of those kids, too. We're going to talk about the teens, but, you know, didn't want to, us to look like we were apart with him.
Yes.
So.
Well, the other thing, too, is shopping for the school supplies, right? So that you put together a backpack filled with all the cool new things that you're going to use at school.
All right. Well, let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll finish this with signs you might be a helicopter or snowblower parent. And some, you know, we're going to be talking about teens too. So Pat, be ready. We're talking teens.
Yeah. We're moving up.
All right. You're listening to Functional Health Radio. Welcome back. This is Functional Health Radio, and I'm Jen Barden. I own a gym called The Shed here in Sandpoint, and I'm joined by licensed marriage and family therapist Jill Kahn, and she practices in Sandpoint. And we're talking back to school and parenting teachers. And now the question is, what are the signs you may be a helicopter or snowblower parent?
Yes, 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 yes. Which is over-functioning with your children. So the reference was to Chaim Ganot, a teacher, psychologist, and psychotherapist who originated the phrase helicopter parenting. So this is interesting because my father was a huge fan of Chaim Ganot. I did not know that he invented helicopter parenting until I read this. So it is a parenting style that refers to overprotective and overly involved parents, and that was coined in 1969. And psychologists and researchers have been studying various forms of overparenting since then. And the latest one, which I think is very appropriate, is the snowblower parent who removes any obstacle in the child's path. And we know that helicopter or snowblower parenting during adolescence and emerging adulthood may deprive children of important opportunities to engage in behaviors that would facilitate their successful transition into adulthood.
Yeah.
It's happening a lot.
It's a big problem.
It's a big problem. The study found that overparented children demonstrated perfectionistic traits along with, and this is important, low motivation, mental health challenges, and struggles with self-efficacy that followed them into the workplace. So what are some of the red flags that you may be overparenting your teen? First of all, you constantly remind them of deadlines. By the teen years, Students should be relying on day planners or programming a calendar with notifications or alarms so they can be self-reliant. Mm-hmm. If they're unsure about deadlines, they should reach out to teachers or classmates on their own.
Right.
Parents who constantly remind their teens about deadlines prevent them from experiencing the consequence of what happens when they forget an assignment.
I know a few parents, they just kept interfering and the child never
hit
bottom.
Never had to experience any consequences. Not a good learning tool. Also, parents need to recognize that their teens may be more capable than they appear. Mm-hmm. So it's not unusual for teens to struggle with executive function skills such as time management, even if they excel in certain areas of school. But one parent saw the child struggling so much at home that she simply didn't believe the teen was capable of meeting deadlines.
Yeah.
However, when the teachers and counselors shared more information on the student, it was revealed that they often met deadlines at school and arrived at class or meetings without any prompting.
Saved it for home.
Yes. The parenting may have been holding the student back by continuing to remind them about everything. Mm-hmm. And it's important to remember that teens can mature very quickly through their school experiences, and sometimes parents need to catch up with the teen.
Yeah. It's hard. I found that I wasn't as helicopter-ish or snowblower with my older kids, but when I had the baby.
Yes. It's easy to do it with the baby.
It's kind of like, ugh. Are you doing it? It was crazy how it switched.
Yeah.
But it did.
I had that same experience.
Yeah.
And when, I found that with the first two kids, I was so busy that they had to be more independent.
Mm-hmm.
And when my last one came along,
yeah.
I was probably more
involved.
Yeah,
that's how I was.
Yeah. So the third one is you communicate on your child's behalf with their teachers and other adults. Yeah. A parent, of course, wants the best outcome for their kids. And so sometimes they take the reins in teacher and school communication. Bad idea.
Yeah.
It's a problem when the parent is serving as a mouthpiece for the student because it signals a lack of confidence in the student's ability and that the child isn't autonomous. Not good for self-esteem. So ask your 6th and 7th graders to send emails to teachers about late work or to clarify homework. That's their job to send the email, not yours.
Right.
By 8th and 9th grade, the parents should be offering gentle advice, but giving their child way more space. A student who succeeds later in life is responsible for their own learning, and if a parent is overly involved in the years leading up to college or the workforce, they may inhibit that.
And it's going on.
It's going
on. College.
And totally
is. In the workforce.
Absolutely. And people, oftentimes employers are complaining about the new workers' inability to do basic kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So you hate to see your child upset when confronted with a problem that would be easy for you to fix. So you try to solve it immediately. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is hard to see them struggling. You don't want to feel like you failed as a parent.
Right.
Even though it might hurt to see your young adult when they're confused or lost, but if you want them to be confident, they need to learn to do things by themselves. Mm-hmm. Building self-reliance goes hand in hand with growing a student's confidence. So another sign, you choose your kids' classes, the topics of their assignments, or make major academic decisions for them.
Mm-hmm.
When your kindergarten is learning letters and establishing school routines, it's appropriate for parents to be hyper-involved in homework assignments. You're kind of modeling it and teaching them. But when a 7-year-old says they have to write an essay about family history and have no idea what that means, you can simply offer suggestions like, why don't you write about grandpa's childhood? By the time a child is in their teen years, it's better to give them confidence in their own ability. If your teen has a writing assignment or project that's overwhelming for them, you can ask questions to generate discussion and write down what they say. Or you can remind them to brainstorm with their peers, teachers, or a tutoring center at mm-hmm. school. Every kid's learning needs are different, and students with special needs may need support into their teens.
Right.
Yeah.
For
so
sure.
You have to discern whether your child is a special needs student or whether you need to back off and let them figure it out themselves.
Right. And even if you do have, like, I had one who had difficulty with, he, She had dysgraphia. So everything was more challenging.
Yes.
And switched. It was a coordination thing. But in the brain. But it didn't mean I was to do the work
for
her.
Yes.
It was to encourage her to go back into the classroom and get the help that she needed.
Yes, absolutely. So the goal always should be to foster independence. Mm-hmm. If a parent's been helping a teen with schoolwork too much, it's never too late to make a shift in your parenting style.
Yeah.
So if this sounds familiar, you might say, I've been thinking about it, and I'm going to start helping you figure out what you need to do.
Yeah.
Self-reflection is also very important. Spend more time asking young adults questions such as, what do you think you need? Mm-hmm. So, yes, developing that ability to self-observe and to make decisions. And here's the last one, and I think this, again, is a very big problem. You're overly involved in a kid's college application process.
Oh, yeah. I know this. I mean, I've watched all my friends go through it in the gym. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, and also, I would say, I would be surprised to find out how many kids, had they not had help with all their work, would have made different choices
yes.
for their future.
Yes.
Because they would have found, this maybe isn't what I'm good at, because right. my mom's good at that.
Right. That's what my mom wants me to do. It's not what I want to do. So if you find yourself saying, when we write the essay, that's a signal that the we instead of you. When people do that, they take ownership away from the student and discourage students from using their own voice mm-hmm. in the process. And I think actually some colleges are noting whether it sounds like it's a student's voice or the parent's voice.
They have a
voice.
Way to know. I have a client who's, yeah. she's in admissions at a big university.
Yes.
And they know when it was a parent that did the application
yes.
and everything.
Yes, yes. So how do you step back? Listen without interruption and remain neutral in your responses. So, in conclusion, remembering all this, if parents overfunction, it sends the implicit message that the child is incapable, and that impairs self-efficacy.
Yeah.
And when parents take over, it deprives kids the opportunity to learn new skills and build their own self-confidence.
Yeah. They've got to figure it out. It's hard.
Yes.
It's definitely hard.
It's painful watching.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I know.
But the long-term ramifications are if you don't give them those skills, they yeah. you can cripple them for yeah. their adult life.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've got a few minutes. I just want to talk about sports.
Okay.
Youth sports, athletes. I was the club director for the volleyball for years. And watching the helicopter parents.
Yes.
And how involved adults are with their kids. And so I wanted to just kind of give us some phrases to help your athlete grow on the field and off. And this is from Stack Sports, and they're a training group. The key one thing to say is you choose the sport you want to play.
Yeah.
Please don't make your kid play the sport that you played
right.
or the one you want them to play or the one that your best friend's kids are playing. Let them pick something they're going to love.
Yes.
You'll find yes. success that way. Asking them, we talked about this, tell me about your practice and game. So they kind of have to go on, and how was it? You know, how was it? And then, you know, this is the opportunity also, I feel, to listen and ask questions. And they can talk as little or as much as they want. Don't yeah. force it. Tell me about your dreams. Allow your child to dream, set goals, and think big. Don't feel the need to help your child see the reality.
Right.
You know? So yeah. what? They want to be a pro football player? Let them believe that.
Let them dream.
Tell them you enjoyed watching them play.
Yeah.
I'm going to add one. Please don't walk away when your child makes a mistake on the field.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse than being on that field and watching your folks walk because they're
ouch.
Disappointed. That's,
yes.
Tell them you believe in them. You know, sometimes it's all the motivation your kid needs to do her best. Tell them you're proud of them. And this goes beyond the sports, in the class even.
Yes.
I mean, not every subject is easy. It's the effort.
Yeah.
You know, you'll come back. If you're like having a bad game, maybe the next game, you know, let them know. We believe in you. You'll come back. This is just a bump in the road. Celebrate small victories, hoping your athlete appreciate the small victories in a game instead of huge achievements. They can then feel that accomplishment.
Yes.
You know? And it's okay to struggle. This is kind of like where everyone gets the participation award. Like, yes. It's okay not to win.
Yeah.
It's okay to struggle. That's part of sport and life. So I think that was an important one.
I remember with my kids, I always thought it was so important to let them know that it was great when they made an assist. They didn't have to make all the goals.
Exactly.
But helping to get the goal was equally important.
Yeah. Saying, I'm sorry. I'm sorry you lost. I'm sorry you feel bad about how you played. I'm sorry you don't like your team. I'm sorry you're not happy with your playing time. This is all you need to do. You don't need a helicopter in and make changes.
Yes.
How can I help? Ask them what you can do to offer support. And then most importantly, also say, I see your progress. I see where you started and where you are now.
Yes.
I mean, those are things that you should give to your child. All right. Well, thank you. This has been Functional Health Radio.